Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at armorall.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
You're listening to the Autosport Podcast.
Aston Martin are the sixth team to launch their challenger for the 2024 F1 season, the AMR 24. With a stable driver lineup, a brand new factory, and coming off the back of some pretty strong results in 2023, is now the time for the Silverstone based team to make another step forward and challenge for race wins. Well, I'm Bryn Lucas, and I'm delighted to have joining me once again John Noble and Matt Kew, both F1 editors. Now, start with, let's go you, Matt. What do you think of the overall look of this brand new offering from Aston Martin?
It's a bit like the other cars we've seen, isn't it? It's that step forward, sort of more of an emphasis on outwash around the front, but they have resisted the temptation, like RB and other teams, to sort of converge around that Red Bull pull rod suspension design. But other than that, I think a bit like, you know, this generation of cars as a whole, it's an evolution. Everyone's done their big sort of step away from zero/bathtub side pods to a sort of Red Bull design, which is the obvious thing to do because that's the fastest design. So yes, we're recording this quite early in the morning. It's not a sudden shock that's jolted me into life this morning.
Yeah, it's not espresso worthy, is it? What about you, John? What do you reckon?
Yeah, I mean, it's a step forward, but I think with some interesting tweaks. I mean, it wasn't a team that got it wrong last year, needed to rip everything up and start again. Started really strongly in 23, had that dip where they just kind of lost direction with developments and couldn't get things to click. So they spent a lot of the time experimenting and pulling it back. So I think it's more about making steps where it needed to make. So as Matt said, the front wing more outwash, side pods a bit more aggressive, floor more aggressive, and rear they've gone push rod. Rear as well, so which basically means gives us the clue of what the Mercedes is doing, so take the Mercedes suspension and gearbox. So enough tweaks there to push them forwards, but it's a grid that's so tight and compact, I think they all know nothing's guaranteed this season.
Yes, yeah, so some subtle tweaks, as you say, some evolutionary changes, which kind of have to happen in Formula One in anything, don't they? If they don't make any changes, they stand still. And if you stand still in Formula One, you actually end up moving backwards. What can Aston Martin realistically hope to achieve then this season with this brand new car, with the same driver lineup? We'll start with you, Matt. Can they actually challenge for wins this year?
It's so hard to say after how strong Red Bull were last season. And obviously, Aston Martin have, you know, they've tried to learn from mistakes, built a car with a sort of higher ceiling so they can develop more into it. But when you consider how strongly McLaren came on, the fact that they've got a new wind tunnel and key personnel who are already started work, but they'll feed into the team, there'll be a bit of lag, so they'll push their forward. Mercedes' new concept Ferrari, so if you've got four teams in total fighting for wins, aside from Aston Martin, which feels like an embarrassment of riches compared to the last sort of 2 years. For Aston to then sort of come from, okay, they got that podium in Brazil, but effectively come from behind in that group to then, you know, win a race, you would think, aside from a competitive step, other teams would have to have a lot of bad days for that to happen. So it'd be great if they could, but it's just with how tight we've seen F1 in terms of, like, you know, Q1 when a tenth and a half covers the entire grid, and with how strong Red Bull were last season, it is tough to envisage Aston Martin winning. I still think that'd be an upset.
But what about podiums? Do you think we'll see them challenging for at least step number three come the end of the race?
Definitely, yeah. They've sort of seemed to slightly alter their approach where they came flying out of the blocks last season and lost their way to the development curve. They seem a bit more content with the car being sort of so-so out of the box and then being able to have a really stable platform to develop onto. So if it's not like the flying start Alonso made last year, then certainly by the end of the season, I think, you know, as you have that sort of cat and mouse race between upgrades where teams take a step forward and then settle in as other team get by, if they're sort of early with upgrades or whatever, I'm sure podiums will come as part of that.
John, I'm not sure if you'll agree with Matt, but I think you probably will.
I think what we might be heading for is a season where there's going to be a lot of weekends where teams are in the window and weekends where they're not. I think the grid's compressing. Everyone's getting closer and closer. Consequence, probably a double consequence, cost cap biting, and the fact that these regulations, I think they do have a limit in terms of how far you can take car performance. And I think the teams at the top are kind of slowing off and the teams at the back have a lot of room to catch up. So if it's a couple of temps between getting knocked out in Q1, getting through to Q3, there'll be weekends where teams don't get the tyres switched on or the setup's wrong or they've kind of fallen behind, others making upgrades. So I think it's going to be a weekend where maybe a year where maybe consistency over the season is going to be quite a hard thing to achieve. But equally, there'll probably be good weekends where you'll get podiums, other weekends of disappointment. And who knows, if someone has made a big step, if Red Bull's a bit destabilised by all that's gone on there this winter, you know, why not roll the dice a little bit? And last year, you know, they came close to winning in Monaco. Why can they not do it again?
So would you say, John, that Aston Martin feel that Red Bull are beatable, at least on a one race opportunity?
Well, Dan Fallows, technical director, we spoke to him and he said, you know, Red Bull is absolutely beatable. And I think that's the mindset. It's more a mindset that they've got to have, that, you know, the physics are the same for Red Bull as they are for Aston Martin. So it's all about producing a car that optimises the physics all around them, produces a car that's quicker. So they're pushing on. Red Bull does nothing that no other team, you know, is impossible for them to achieve. So I think they can push on. I think it's hard to beat where Red Bull's at because it's got the best platform. It's understood the rules better than anybody else. But teams are closing up. There are opportunities opening up. I think it's unlikely for anyone to, especially Aston Martin, to beat Red Bull over the course of a championship. But on one weekend, you know, bit of the rub of the green and luck going their way, why not?
Yeah, why not? Exactly, why not? And that's the argument, isn't it? They'll all be saying, well, you know, we've got a chance, we're out on the grid and we've got a decent car. Last season, though, they started phenomenally. They had a really, really strong start and then they had this real mid-season slump. Are they expecting to not have this mid-season slump this year? Are they expecting to get over it? And if so, how are they going about that, John?
Yeah, I asked Fernando Alonso this question. I said, you know, do you have confidence that the team understood what went wrong and have done what needs to be? And he says, yep, because if I hadn't, I wouldn't be sleeping at night, because it was the big thing that derailed their championship last year. They're quite coy on what went wrong. You know, it's probably a combination of, there were some front wing rule tweaks came in last year. So some team, the FIA tightened up what teams could and couldn't play around with on front wings, which, you know, had an impact, even though Aston Martin has neither confirmed nor denied it was involved in any of that. And upgrades, they've talked about side effects. So I think these cars are very, very complicated in terms of pitching the right aero platform, where you want the car, ride height wise in slow corners, medium corners, high speed corners. Very, very complicated. I think it's very easy to plug something into the system of an upgrade that appears to deliver an answer on in the wind tunnel on the computer and on the engineers' computers, but drivers can't optimize it. We saw Lance Stroll lose confidence in the car. The rear end of the car got a bit loose. It's something Fernando Alonso is much better at dealing with. So I think they just dialed something into the car. Took them a while to work out what it was, but I sense a better degree of confidence now that they've understood what happened and it won't happen again.
Let's just stay with the drivers briefly, and I'll come to you, Matt, on this, because they've got the same driver lineup, and last season, Lance Stroll, he came under a lot of flack, didn't he? Fernando Alonso was the main driver, as we always expect, and Lance Stroll, the old adage, really, that he was only there because of his dad's money, came out a fair bit through 2023. What does he have to do, and what's he expecting and hoping to do this season?
Well, the first thing, and I don't say this too flippantly, is he needs to stay on his bike during, you know, his training regime, doesn't he? Because that was a huge sort of setback for him. You know, it showed, I think, despite a lot of criticism, it showed he is obviously committed to F1, the fact that he was so speedy at coming back through his recovery and really sort of pushing the physical limits. But when the AMR 23 was at its absolutely best, he was injured, you know, and not only was he sort of still facing some sort of lingering pain, but obviously he hadn't been at Bahrain for testing to throw it around a track, dial in all the, you know, changing X on the car does this to does Y to performance and handling. He hadn't had a chance to sort of go through the full testing program as he sat, you know, in the A&E waiting for Felipe Drugovich to do the lap. So that he then basically missed out when the AMR was 23 was at its best, and is trying to sort of get his head around it while they're going around this development path that's bringing some bits that they reverse engineered from the 2024 car getting lost. I do think, you know, that I'm not in total defense of Lance Stroll. He did lack speed, he did lack consistency. I would also, compared to Alonso, I'd also think there were a couple of his approaches with his mentality were like, you know, the huge qualifying shunt he had in Singapore, just because he was 0.3 down and said, you know, sod it, let's go flat out through the final corner. Well, the final corner isn't flat out, and then you've smeared a car into the barrier, you've given your team a whole load of work to do, taking a nice chunk out of the cost cap. So I don't agree that's the right approach. So, but he also, yeah, so if he can find a little bit of that speed, he also says, you know, I had the lion's share of technical problems and unreliability last year, so if they can be a bit more evenly spread out, then I'll be a bit closer. I'm not saying for a moment that he's going to sort of dance all over Alonso, but if he can just make that team a bit more sort of evenly matched, and so in a Constructors' Championship, there won't be such a gulf, and then suddenly McLaren, Ferrari, Mercedes do look that bit more gettable.
But it's easier said than done, isn't it? You know, just trying to close that gap when you've got Fernando Alonso as your teammate, so much experience. John, what do you think Lance should do or could do this season? What's his main aim?
Well, I think the main aim is to get on terms with Fernando, but I think that's a pretty nigh on difficult task for anybody in Formula One, because Fernando, you know, is a monster. He's talked, I mean, Fernando always says he's at his best, but he made quite an emphasis when we spoke to him about being his best. He's got a new nutritionist in the team, changed his approach to food, changed his approach to fitness regime, he's changing his approach to dealing with races and jet lag, so he's pushing himself on. He's been through all the physical tests, says the slight deterioration he saw last year has been addressed. He's in the best, the data says he's in the best shape he's ever been. The motivation's there. He's also got that interesting dynamic of the Mercedes seat for 25 being around. Whether or not Mercedes wants him or not, we don't know. But Fernando knows he's a free agent, he's available. He said several times to us that there are three world champions on the grid right now, and only one of them is available for next year. So he's in quite a good position in the driver market, depending on how things shake out, performing well. So, you know, it's going to be tough for Lance to get on top of it. And I think critical is how the car performs. If Lance, when the car, he's got a car underneath him he's totally confident with, you know, can be really, really quick. He pulls out, you know, brilliant performances when in tricky conditions, for example. So when the circumstances are correct, Lance can do it. Problem is, he's not as consistent. And if the car isn't to his liking, as we saw that middle phase of last year, he struggles quite a lot. So I think if he can get close to Fernando, he'll be happy. But I'm not sure that, you know, the team owner wants him to be close to Fernando. I think the team owner wants him to be beating him.
Yeah, exactly. But the trouble is, I mean, there's a lot of drivers out there that can be good on one race. They can have really, I mean, there's some very, very good drivers that have even won Grand Prix in the past that you'd say weren't great throughout their entire season, but they had a, or their entire career, but they had a decent one-off or two-off races. So there's going to be a lot of pressure on Lance. And if we look at 2025, and we're still kind of picking through what happened just a couple of weeks ago when Lewis Hamilton announced that he was dashing over to Ferrari, and you've kind of hinted on this distraction, shall we say, for the drivers. Is it going to be much of a distraction for Fernando Alonso and for Lance Stroll looking ahead to 2025? I'll stay with you, John, on this because you brought it up. So let you bat this one back.
I think for Lance, not, because I think, you know, as long as Lance is performing at a certain level, I think he's virtually assured that seat anyway. I think only if he was, you know, back of the grid, not interested, delivering no points, I think then it would become a bit of a different issue. But I think if he's performing consistently to a set level, then he's in. And I think Fernando, I think in some respects, Fernando quite likes these situations where there's a bit of uncertainty in the driver market, kind of feels he can play it. He's, you know, Aston Martin going to have to convince him that it wants to keep him as well and offer him certain things. So, you know, if Fernando's motivated, Fernando knows how to play the game in Formula One. He's brilliant at mastering the paddock, kind of loves politics and intrigue and playing the press and all that kind of manoeuvring. I think it's perfect fodder. It's probably better fodder for Fernando having this uncertainty in the driver market than if Aston Martin was the only seat available and he didn't have options and couldn't kind of manoeuvre things around. Because I think when he feels himself backed into a corner is often the time that he kind of the toys come out the pram sometimes and something dramatic can happen.
He's a dangerous beast, isn't he, when he looks ahead and, there's possibilities and doors are slightly ajar. And I think Fernando's forced quite a few doors open over the last few seasons, Matt.
Yeah, well, that's why Aston Martin should be well aware that if they're not careful, he could go, because it's just the same way they got him, isn't it? Alonso was in those drawn-out contract talks with Alpine over, does he get a one-year deal, one plus one? I want a two-year deal. And then Aston Martin swooped in and picked him up. And it was, you know, obviously done with Lawrence Stroll more or less overnight after Vettel announced his retirement. So all of that, how they got Alonso, should be a reminder to the Aston, you know, bosses that he can do the same to them and be gone sort of in double quick time. So I think, you know, they, as they've said, they're absolutely intent on keeping him, but they should, like any well-run organisation, maybe have a contingency plan just in case. And then I suppose you've got a slightly bigger picture, which is there's 13 seats up for grabs at the end of this summer as it stands. I'm sure a few people get, you know, locked into longer term contracts or whatever, and we'll find out a bit more as the season goes on. But as it stands, yeah, well over half the grid are up for contracts. So Alonso may have a couple of destinations he's eyeing up, but equally Aston Martin will have a couple of reserve choices in case he doesn't decide to stay. But yes, if they're coming out in 9-10 months' time going, you know, we've really been done over here, Aston would have no one to blame but themselves because of precisely the way they got Alonso in the first place.
Yeah, and John, staying with Alonso for a second, I know it sounds a bit like a dull topic because we just know how good he is, but will he have a lot of opportunities this year, or do you think that his age will be a factor when teams look to, you know, their future as well?
I don't think age is a factor. I think a lot of the time, I mean, the Mercedes situation, for example, is quite an interesting one because they've got various options. And it probably a lot depends on how Kimi Antonelli does in Formula 2. I think it's probably a no-brainer to think that they view Antonelli as potentially their long-term play. But it's a question of when that long-term play becomes now, because it could be Antonelli smashes Formula 2, is a brilliant sensation, and they just decide now's the right time with an experienced George Russell. We'll put Antonelli in and go for 25. But if Antonelli has a difficult season, doesn't seem ready, then Mercedes has got to think, well, maybe it's a 1, 2 or 3 year push to get Antonelli up. So we need to find options. And, you know, if Fernando's offered a 1 year contract at Mercedes or 2 year contract at Mercedes, is that enough to tempt him? Would he think, I just want these 1 or 2 years and then I'm finished? I think there's a lot of factors kind of going around that's going to dictate the driver market. And in terms of how long Mercedes want a driver in that seat if Antonelli isn't ready. So I think that's going to be the critical decision, and that will come from Mercedes first.
It's interesting you bring in Formula 2 and Antonelli, because, you know, it's not the first time we've seen a Formula 2 driver on the cusp of stepping up to Formula 1. And there seems to be a slightly different way of going about it, a different approach now, rather than the Haas way of bringing the guys straight up and seeing them fail. We saw with Piastri, didn't we, that he spent a year out on the sidelines as a test driver, reserve driver. Matt, do you think that it's likely we'll start seeing these Formula 2 drivers, these quick F2 drivers stepping straight into an F1 seat, or do you think there will be that 1 year to adjust?
I don't think the pattern's sort of set in stone one way or the other, because I know that Piastri's camp absolutely hated that year out and really think it's a year lost and that he should have been in the car, particularly with how that relationship went south with Alpine. But then, you know, you look at a couple of other examples, you know, Drugovich will forever be in that holding pattern. There are sort of limited seats. So, I don't think Piastri, anyone should set the template off that. And I don't think Mercedes would have any intention. I think if Antonelli is the one and he wins the F2 crown this year or next year, if there is a place in Mercedes, he'll go there. If there isn't, they will ensure that there's a berth at Williams. I'm convinced of that. So I don't see him doing the 12 months out testing of old cars regime that you know a couple of his predecessors have had to make do with. I just, on the Alonso thing, I also thought it was interesting when we spoke to him. So just the narrative creep that, you know, we go from drivers saying, I don't see myself in F1 when I'm in my 40s or in the next year reset. He was then, the numbers I think he was talking about as if he can keep his condition primed and have the enthusiasm, then he started 47, 48, maybe he could go up to 50, it is a possibility. I just love that sort of creep in the narrative from Alonso. He's you know, it's off season, but he still box off. He had a pop at the testing format as well, which obviously he'd sat down with a cup of tea before speaking to the media and thought, yep, this is a point I want to make. And so he's just as fired up as ever, and that's brilliant.
Well, he's earned the right, hasn't he? He's a bit of a tinker, but he's earned the right. We saw Vettel doing the same thing, didn't we, near the end? They just thought, well, yeah, I'm going to say what I want to say because I've earned the right to do so. So it's great to see him still pressing the buttons. Let's head back to Aston Martin and stay with them for a second, because they are a team that seem to be on the cusp of breaking into the top three. Everything seems to be in place. We mentioned at the top that they got a brand new factory. They've got the new car that's come out as well that we're talking about here today. Can they realistically look to break into the top three? And I don't just want a one-word answer, John.
Oh, you don't want a one. So the last time we did this, you did want a one-word answer. So it's much easier now. I think the difficulty is that Formula One has changed a lot and it's now too close and competitive for anyone to be guaranteed anything. I think some teams can feel that they've had a brilliant winter and made a step forwards, but I think a lot of teams feel they've had brilliant winters and made a step forward. And we're now talking 1, 2, 3 temps is the difference between being really, really competitive and at the front end of that midfield and fighting for podiums and wins and struggling to get out of Q1 and having a bit of a mare of a weekend. And I think it's going to be quite brutal in some respects this season in terms of how that shakes up. So I think the critical thing is starting the season, as Aston Martin talked about, with a platform that you can develop aggressively. And then you're going to have to push on as quick as you can without busting your cost cap to bring development and keep pushing forwards. So I think the potential is there for Aston Martin to do it. The reality is that Formula One is a, you know, brutal arena right now, and I think there's going to be a lot of disappointments as well as good points for them this year.
Yeah, Matt, what do you reckon? Top three, or do you think that what would be your prediction for the end of this season? Where are Aston Martin going to sit?
In terms of the top three, obviously you've got Red Bull, Mercedes, Ferrari, and then from the development race last year, you've got McLaren and then Aston Martin. So for Aston to get top three, theoretically two of those teams have to come out. So which two are you picking? I know Mercedes, new concept, Ferrari a bit further behind, blah, 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 but where are you coming from? So I think it will be so tight. I'm going to go with a slightly more philosophical answer than John. It's a bit like the Premier League where, you know, I don't support any of the teams in the title race, but wouldn't it be good if it wasn't City just to have something fresh? Well, it has been that as the established top three for a couple of years now. Wouldn't it be good if you could have a McLaren or Aston Martin interloper in there, you know, to both for the good of F1 and sort of for other teams as that example that they can take a step forward and that, you know, there is the unpredictability, or as John says, if it is this race by race inconsistency, that will frustrate the hell out of teams and drivers, but that should be quite good that you've got a fluctuating order rather than it being like qualifying in 2x2, whatever. So it would be good to have someone else in there, but which of those two, which team are you going to dislodge to make room for Aston Martin?
Yeah, I'm reading between the lines there, Matt, and I'm thinking...
No, I don't think I'll be in a top three.
No. I mean, like you say, that the swing would have to be way too much. You'd have to be, you know, a party political extravaganza, wouldn't it, to get this sort of swing happening? And going back to the team lineup, Fernando Alonso banking points, but Lance Stroll, he needs to start banking a lot more points if they're going to break through into, well, even into the top four. What do you reckon on that, John?
Yeah, that's the other factor we've not discussed, is Lance didn't deliver as many points as Fernando last year. So, and if things are really tight, if we are into this, you know, season of ups and downs, and you know, knocked out in Q1 one weekend, top, you know, front row of the grid the next weekend, it's going to be about, you need to deliver when that car is capable of delivering. You can't have a, if you're off weekends or the weekends your car's strong, that's not very good for the team. So I think they've got a tough ask. I think I can't see a team like Aston Martin beating Red Bull over the course of a season. And you would have to suspect Mercedes, all the capability that's had over previous seasons, it got the 22 car wrong. It made mistakes over the 22-23 winter that rolled into last year. But it's hard to imagine they're going to mess it up for a third year running to not be there. So I think at best, probably Aston could aim for third, but it is reliant still on, you know, a Ferrari not making the gains it hopes and McLaren not building on last year. So I think even third may be you know, overly optimistic.
So basically what we're getting is an unequivocal no from both of you. Well, I'm happy with that. I can take that. You know, I can live with these definitive answers. Now, we're going to finish this episode with a very quick one-word answer. And we've not even planned this part at all. So start with you, John. 2025 driver lineup, Aston Martin, is it going to be Fernando Alonso alongside Lance Stroll? Yes or no?
Yes.
Matt?
For sake of difference, I'll say no.
If I ask you to expand upon that, will that throw you completely under the bus?
No, I just think there's, you know, we know that Aston Martin put a couple of feelers out last year, whether that was to replace Alonso or to work alongside Alonso. So you've got that on their side, and then I'm sure Carlos Sainz topping and tailing his CV at the minute, a couple of other options. So if Alonso was to do something slightly Machiavellian and take the exit, then, you know, I'm sure they'll have, whether it's as inspiring as a replacement for Alonso, but yeah, I'm sure they'll have someone else on speed dial.
Well, thank you very much there, John, and thanks to Matt as well. Well, there you go, the AMR 24. We'll be back very soon as more teams reveal their cars for the 2024 Formula One season. Next up is Ferrari, so do join us for that one. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on the Autosport Podcast.
Sports Social Podcast Network.